The Book Nook on WYSO is presented by the Greene County Public Library, with additional support from the Clark County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Wright Memorial Library, and Dayton Metro Library.
Good morning. Welcome to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McInnes. I began doing this program back in 1994. I had only lived in Yellow Springs for about a year at that point, and I was always looking for opportunities to interview authors, and I knew that there were a couple of authors living in Yellow Springs that I really needed to have on the program. Now, how was I going to do that? I didn't know. Well, finally, they were having an event, a signing of books, a joint signing in Yellow Springs, and it gave me the pretext to get a hold of them and say, let's do an interview. Let's have both of you on the show together. They were husband and wife. They were married in 1960. She grew up here. He was from the Bronx. Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph. Virginia died a few years ago. Arnold is still with us. Virginia died in 2002. She wrote over 40 books. Arnold has written many books too. And we're going to revisit the interview I did with the two of them, one of my favorite interviews from 1996. Here's Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph on the Best of the Book Nook. Welcome to the Afternoon Excursions Book Nook. And I've been joined in the studio by a pair of special guests, Arnold Adolph and Virginia Hamilton. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
Jake.
The most recent books are a book of poetry by Arnold, Slow Dance, Heartbreak Blues. And Virginia, your most recent one is When Birds Could Talk, Bats Could Sing. And preceding that by a few months was Her Stories, African-American Folk Tales, Fairy Tales, and True Tales. And these are additions to your already hefty catalog of books.
These are additions to my collections activity plus the other 32 books I have or something like that, 32 or 33. I've kind of lost count. But they're great fun, and they've been taken over by the public in a very strong way. Her Stories, which came out in November, went into a second printing of 50,000 by December. So we were very excited by the movement on that book, and the Birds book is really capturing people who want this kind of book in their libraries and schools and for their kids.
All these collections of folklore have created the slash effect, where you're now a novelist slash folklorist.
What kind of slash is that, Arnold?
The forward slash.
Oh, I you know, being online and on the internet, it's either a forward or a backward slash.
She's teaching me the HTTP slash. I think it's a dance.
It's slash slash.
Speaking of the internet, you have your own webpage now.
Yes, I have a very deep homepage on the internet, on AOL as well as Netscape, and I have, people in town did it for me, the Burges. I call them the master builders here in town. And we have all of my book jackets on, all of the events where I'm appearing through June, and then I'll put July and August, September on, and all about the books. So it's really quite nice, and it looks very pretty. Everybody thinks it's beautiful.
So people can browse these beautiful illustrations.
That's right. They absolutely can, and find out about the books as well. And I'm connected to Borders Books as well and other sites. That's what people do on the internet. They get to know one another. They say, well, hook up with me, and I'm connected with stores all around, and not businesses so much, but education people and institutions. So it's quite nice.
And your address on the internet is?
Do you have it there? Or do you want me to read it?
It looks like, is it http://www.cris.com/, is that a cedilla?
That's a tilde.
Okay. Bonfire 2.
Right. That's on Netscape.
And the AOL address is Bodeep.
That's right.
At AOL.com.
Right. And, after the slash.
And Bodeep is spelled B-O-D-E-E-P.
Right.
Okay.
And Bonfire 2 is the numeral 2.
Right.
Okay. So if you're out there cruising the information superhighway, take a little detour and check out those
pages. Yeah, you can,
pages.
And if you can't remember that, you can put the search word in Virginia Hamilton. You'll come up with the state of Virginia, and you'll come up with Alexander Hamilton, but you'll also come up with me.
Let's get into a little background here. You're originally from Yellow Springs, Virginia, correct?
That's right. I was born here.
And Arnold, you're originally from New York City.
New York City, the Bronx.
How did you meet?
Oh, I was sitting on a curb eating some day-old brownies.
He's
when
lying.
She bopped on by. It was 1958. It was a lovely time in New York. And she came to New York City to seek her fame and fortune and tripped over me instead. And
we met at a party.
I used to be involved in the jazz world and managed.
We had mutual friends.
Charles Mingus and Virginia and I met. And it was.
The rest is her story.
The rest is her story. The rest is PG-13 at least. But it was a long time ago, and we were married in 1960, so we just celebrated 36 years.
37.
March of 96 is 36 years.
I never could.
I do the math in the family.
So was Charles Mingus present when you met?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And very interested in Virginia, too. But he had.
That's
he
enough
had,
of the history.
No, let me tell that one part of it because it shows the creative artist at war with the creative human. He was interested in Virginia, but he was an extraordinarily focused creative genius, a bassist and a composer. And he was on a bill with Sonny Rollins at the old Five Spot. And we went down there. He had a play that night. And while he was playing longer and longer sets, in an attempt to overcome Rollins, I was talking longer and longer sets worth to Virginia. So in the end
of story.
He didn't have a chance.
Virginia, you have deep roots here in the Yellow Springs community.
Right.
I think going back to what, 1850s?
Yes, my grandfather, Levi Perry, was a fugitive from the state of Virginia, thus my name, and came to southern Ohio, across the Ohio River, to actually Jamestown first, where apparently his mother knew someone. And he was a boy at the time. And the lady in Jamestown raised him because his mother was apparently forced back. She was not allowed to be freed. And so since that time, my mother's family has lived in this town. Levi Perry was her father, and she was the oldest daughter of 10 children.
And you returned in 1969 from New York City the old farmstead.
That's right. We had two kids, and we all wanted to raise them the way I was raised, mm-hmm. that is, freely riding bikes and that kind of thing. And they did. They lived much as I had lived my life here. And it was very good. We built a house on the last few acres of the family farm off of Dayton Street, on Union Street, behind Dayton Street. And that's been our base, although we live and move around a lot, live other places.
But. We had begun to publish in New York after really struggling. We were able to break through in almost 10 years amount of time. So Virginia's first novel, Zeely, was published in 67, and my first publication, which was an anthology of African-American poetry, I'm the Darker Brother, was published in 68. And so after that, you could sign some contracts and be able to leave New York City and move out to Ohio and build a house.
So you were in the Big Apple. You started finding some success as writers,
right.
And you got the freedom mm-hmm. to leave.
That's right.
Right.
How did you decide to become writers?
Well, I've always written from the time I think I knew how to write. I mean, I came from a storytelling family or a gossipy kind of huge extended family. And that was the entertainment, you know, on Sunday after church, people would come visiting and they would tell things. So I learned very early how things began, what the middle was like and what the ending was like. And so I started writing at a very young age, but I didn't know I wanted to be a writer, but I've always written.
I grew up in a three-room apartment in the East Bronx in a family, some of whom had been born in New York City and some of whom had been born in Europe. And English was a second language. America was a new and a second home. And the first thing I realized was that everybody talked all the time and, of course, over each other and through each other. And so talking was a very big thing. But and then they read, and so I had to read because that's where they got the ammunition to have all these wonderful political and social arguments. But when I was a young preteen, I realized that if you could write your own material, then you could have something that your aunts and uncles didn't have in these discussions. And so by the time I was 10, 11, 12, I think writing was what I was focused on, and poetry immediately took hold of me rather than me take hold of it, and that's all I've ever wanted to do, and basically that's all I do.
You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to 1996. That seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? My interview with Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph. They were husband and wife, and they joined me in studio that day to talk about some of their recent books. Virginia was incredibly prolific, and so is Arnold. Arnold is still putting out books. Virginia died in 2002, and she won many awards. In fact, in 1967, she published Zeeley, her first book. It was named an American Library Association Notable Book and won the Nancy Block Award. She published The Planet of Junior Brown. That was named a Newbery Honor book and also won the Lewis Carroll Shelf Award in 1971. M.C. Higgins' The Great came out in 1974. It won the Newbery Medal, making Virginia the first black author to receive the medal. The book also won the National Book Award, the Lewis Carroll Shelf Award, the Boston Globe Horn Book Award, and it was the New York Times Outstanding Children's Book of the Year. She received the Hans Christian Andersen Award for writing, the highest international recognition bestowed on an author or illustrator of children's literature. She received a MacArthur Fellowship, the Laura Ingalls Wilder Award, the University of Southern Mississippi de Grammont Medal. In 1990, she got the Catholic Library Association's Regina Medal, given annually, for continued distinguished contributions to children's literature. Virginia died in 2002, and there were several books that came out after her passing. Three books published posthumously: Br'er Rabbit and the Tar Baby Girl in 2003, Wee Winnie Witch's Skinny in 2004, and Virginia Hamilton, Speeches, Essays, and Conversations, edited by her husband Arnold Adolph and Casey Cook in 2010. We'll continue with my conversation with Arnold and Virginia right after this. You're listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, going back to my 1996 conversation with the late Virginia Hamilton and her husband, Arnold Adolph. And I neglected to mention, Virginia won so many awards. She also got the Edgar Allan Poe Award, the Coretta Scott King Award, and the Boston Globe Horn Book Award. And as they mentioned, as they talked about their biographies during this conversation, Virginia grew up in Yellow Springs. Arnold was from the Bronx. They met in New York City. Charles Mingus, the jazz musician, was part of their story. Virginia was the youngest of five children, and she grew up in a large extended family here in Yellow Springs. The area has been home to her mother's family since the late 1850s, and her maternal grandfather, Levi Perry, was brought into the state as an infant via the Underground Railroad. She got a full scholarship to Antioch College and later transferred to Ohio State, and she met Arnold in New York City after getting out of college. We'll continue now with my interview with Virginia and Arnold. We call it the Best of the Book Nook.
Arnold, when I was reading Slow Dance Heartbreak Blues, I was just amazed at how in touch you are with juvenile angst, with with teenage angst, what it's like.
All I do is look in the mirror. There's no need to research beyond my own head.
How do you stay in touch with that?
I exploit my own immaturity. It's a very easy process. This is the oldest. I began publishing anthologies, and I published a great many poetry picture books for very young readers, and I continue, or young readers and their older allies. I continue to write for children, but this is a true, what they call in the trade, YA, young adult slash adult. And so I guess it's taken me all these years to go from, 6 to 16. And that's basically the way I feel about it. It's very natural for me to muck around in the emotions of being an adolescent because perhaps arrested development. I don't know.
He's being slightly facetious. We talk to a lot of kids.
We know
kids. They send us mail. We know what they're thinking. I see them on the internet and get email all the time. So we know how they're thinking and how they talk, you know.
And you fictionalize. Feeling. I pride myself on shaping. Dylan Thomas's phrase, craft and sullen art, is really a motto for what I attempt to do when I revise and shape my poems, but within each poem you may find something from my own adolescence or something I've appropriated from our children's when they were growing up teenagers in Yellow Springs or something I've seen at Ha Ha Pizza on a Sunday night or
I got a little taste of Ha Ha Pizza in one of those
there's
poems.
A Ha Ha Pizza poem in there.
It was the one referring to soy cheese, I believe.
I think they were out of soy cheese that night. We were the last customers in. Was it a
right.
Sunday night?
Yeah.
Yes, that's right.
My guests are Arnold Adolph and Virginia Hamilton, and I must tell you, I've had a lot of guests in the Book Nook in the last year and a half, and I very rarely get nervous about people coming in, but this is just a real thrill for me to have the two of you here on the program.
Well, that's nice thank of you, you to say. Lovely. Thank you.
I remember approaching Arnold on Xenia Avenue about 6 months ago and saying, you know, I'd really like to get you folks on my show, and Arnold said, we were wondering when you were going to ask us.
Usually I'm the aggressive New Yorker, but I thought I'd cool it this time.
Virginia, your new books, When Birds Could Talk, Bats Could Sing, and Her Stories, took an incredible amount of research. It's
right.
obvious from
right.
reading them.
Well, yes, I do collections as well as novels and biography, and the collections have, interestingly enough, become very popular in the last 10 years. My first collection was The People Could Fly, which became a classic almost immediately, and it was followed by, what was the name of that one? Well, I can't think of the name of my
own. In the beginning, the International Multicultural Collection.
I have had a multicultural collection of creation stories, and they just, I don't know, children and adults seem to take to that kind of format as being something that they can dip into over and over again. And as you say, the research is formidable. I've been doing it a long time. And on the Her Stories book, I did have a researcher helping me in New York while I was in Ohio because I was working on other things. And she happened to be a really inspired, very good researcher who would have inklings about things and call me. And so then, we would discuss whether I wanted this material or not. But it takes a long time and research and collecting versions, trying to figure out where the story began, and that's very important. And to keep the authentic voice while recasting the stories, because none of these stories were written for children. They were written to be read by people. There was no separation. And they were written down. They were told orally in families and communities, there was no separation. So I'm doing what the Grimm brothers did in Germany, actually. They went around collecting stories and put them in collections. And that was the beginning of this whole cultural learning of the world, because then other people in other countries did the same things the Grimms did. It hadn't been done very much before that. So I'm carrying on that tradition. And it's really great.
I have to say, with the addition that some of the stories are originally in Gullah, and you have to learn almost a translative kind of approach to it.
Well, I know enough Gullah now, yes, after having done it for so long, that it's not that hard, but it is. Some of it was in very heavy Gullah.
I observe in the house, and I'm amazed at the process.
It's fun. Gullah is like this phrase, he yeti, but he ain't shum, which means he hears you, but he doesn't see you. You know, it's almost another language, and many of these stories were collected in Gullah.
And is this primarily a language from the Sea Island region along the Georgia coast?
Or, well, it is now, but at one time, Gullah was probably the most widely spoken black English in America. That is, everywhere in the South, everyone spoke it, master and slave and whoever else. It's a combination of all of those people who came to this country at that time, plus the Caribbean languages and African languages, because slaves were forbidden to speak their own language. They had to learn something, and this is what developed. Gullah is thought to be a short version of Angola, because Angolan slaves were thought to have some great power. They were the people who could fly. So that's where that comes from.
Well, these are intriguing legends in these books. In her stories, the focus is on female protagonists,
right,
in the African-American tradition, and you had to search high and low to find some of these stories.
That's right.
Some of them are very unusual, like the one with the mermaid.
Yeah, there weren't supposed to be any African-American mermaid stories, but I kept finding them. So, you know, the more you dig, the more you uncover, and I found several versions. There aren't supposed to be any African-American fairy tales as well, but there are, and ones about real fairies, though, little tiny winged fairies, are few and far between, because it wasn't an African tradition, although there are African fairies. They don't necessarily have wings on them. And the one great fairy story I found, I could not get permission to use because I was changing the heavy Gullah, and the estate refused to give me permission to revise and recast that story, much to my deep chagrin. But, you know, I had no control over that.
And
but it's there.
You didn't want to retell it in the heavy Gullah because it would have been hard to understand?
It would have been hard
to
understand. Kids couldn't read it. And it sounds like broken, stereotypal black English. It really isn't, but that's what it sounds like. And it makes kids uncomfortable, particularly black kids in an integrated situation.
There's racist overtone.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. So I leave it alone. What I do with these books as I use a colloquial kind of speech while keeping in mind the time of the story and trying to keep that feel, that folkloric feel to them, I've developed a kind of oral written telling that can be read aloud and can be also read to oneself. So I think it works for these stories.
And I'm so impressed by the illustrations in these three books. The Slow Dance Heartbreak Blues illustrations are really different.
That was an exciting find. It's always difficult to find an illustrator who can go beyond illustrating and really just take off from what you've done, particularly when it's not an anthology, when it's your own poetry, and contribute. Couldn't find anyone for these young adult poems, and it's very difficult to illustrate a book for teenagers because most adult poetry books are not illustrated, although there was a fine tradition before this century of illustrating adult poetry. At any rate, our daughter's significant other is a superb Oberlin-trained pianist. His brother is a superb studio painter. And coincidentally, we're in New York a couple of years ago and go see a show he's got on Columbus Avenue. And I say, wow, you know, have you ever thought about coming in and doing some illustration? And he said, no. And for him, it was exciting because it was mastering new photo collage techniques. What he likes to do, and I think I'm far from an expert in the terminology, but what he likes to do is photo-based conceptual art. So first he does Polaroid shots of what he's doing, and then he paints over the Polaroid shots. My contribution, I'm proud to say, was having all of the type on the front of the book and the illustration on the back of the book, so it looks like just the opposite than what you would want
to see. I was thoroughly confused.
For bedevilment. Yes, just for the fun of it, and also I felt bookstores would have to have the book open this way if they wanted to out there. He's now illustrating other books for young people as well, nonfiction particularly. I'm happy to say I have all of the original art, so it's great stuff. Photo collages on the inside, black and white, so they don't make the book look too young for a teenager. Exciting stuff.
On her stories, Virginia, the Dillons are just incredible. Their mastery of fish. They seem to love to draw fish.
Yeah, they really – well, they're beautiful artists. They were the United States nominees for the Hans Christian Andersen Award this year. They are master painters, you know. They do all science fiction jackets. They do adult – all kinds of things, and they have shows all the time. And I've known them for a long time. They've done a number of my book jackets. They did The People Could Fly and Many Thousand Gone and the Anthony Burns, which is a slave rescue case jacket, which is really beautiful. They're just, you know, I don't have to say anything to them. They know, you know, sometimes you have to be very careful with illustrators, but you never have to say a word. They take my research that I give them, but they also do a lot of research of their own. And they just bring something entirely new and different to the book. And I think it makes it great.
The illustration for the story Marie and the Redfish, where the fish is coming out of the water.
Right.
I just stopped, and I looked at that picture for about 10 minutes.
Yeah.
It's just such a powerful picture. It's incredible. And then the latest book, When Birds Could Talk, Bats Could Sing, illustrated by Barry Moser. Yeah. Is it Moser?
Barry Moser. He's a very well-known watercolors. He's just superb. Plus the fact he does, right now he's illustrating the St. James version of the Bible. The first time that it has been illustrated in this century. I mean, this is the kind of thing that Barry does on other levels, you know. He has done Alice in Wonderland, a whole woodcut limited edition. The Bible will be 450
copies. Washington Irving, Wizard of Oz.
He's just incredible. And the fact that he will do my books makes me so happy. And when he got these stories, he just thought they were hilarious. And he went crazy, started painting, and very few of them had to be redone or touched. He just went with it. And he and I have always disagreed about animals and clothing on animals. And I've never liked to have animals clothed in any book of mine. And he feels the opposite. So we compromised. Every bird and bat in this book has a hat on.
And they're very cute
they
hats.
They are very funny.
I think he did twice as many illustrations.
Yeah, he did about 40 illustrations. He just loved it. He's from the South. He's from Tennessee. And these are Southern stories, which he felt very close to, I think.
He did the same thing for In the Beginning, which was a Newbery Honor book.
We haven't really talked very much about When Birds Could Talk, Bats Could Sing. Martha Young is a very important name involved in this book.
Right. Martha Young is a very strange and incredible story. She was 3 years old at the end of the Civil War, and her father had plantations and slaves. She heard a lot of stories when she was a child. After slavery as well, the slaves became the paid servants of her wealthy family. And Martha Young started writing, and she wrote down many of the stories she had heard, and she wrote many of her own. She has several different books and categories, and it's not possible at this time to know which were her own and which were stories she'd heard. So what I did is really render them all in this one book and recast them for young people. And they're really delightful. She became absolutely unknown. She was very famous at one time. She gave readings at Carnegie Hall. All the New York papers reviewed them and so forth. She became what they called an expert interpreter of Negro dialect. I have no idea whether she was stereotyping them or not. All I know is she was utterly famous. But Joel Chandler Harris's stories at the same time made him even more famous, and she disappeared. And so did all her stories. So what I had a find, this was a beautiful, magnificent find, helped by my researcher who called me one day and she said, well, these aren't really stories about women, but they're about birds. I said, well, send them to me. And what she sent me were the Martha Young stories. And I said, my goodness, this is fantastic.
Some dusty corner of a warehouse in the New York Public Library near the Hudson River.
Yeah, and I'm bringing them back to life again. And they're really wonderful stories.
Well, I never realized that bats could sing so well. I never understood why hummingbirds are the way they are, and yeah, you can get an explanation of all this.
They're hilarious. They're marvelously funny. All the reviewers pick up on that. That they are funny.
Very lighthearted.
And significant, with a moral.
It's a kind of a departure for me. You know, everybody expects me to be so serious. You know, I carry my train of awards behind me like the tail of a kite, and so they expect everything I do to be so utterly significant, you know. Well, maybe this is, but it was also a lot of fun. All my books are, and sometimes people miss the fun of them because they're looking for something deep, you know. But birds is really just plain fun.
You're listening to 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world. Since 1958, I'm Vic McCunis, and you're listening to the Best of the Book Nook, going back 22 years to an interview I did with Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph. They were husband and wife. Both of them were prolific writers, and it was so fun to interview them together in studio because they were sharing a microphone, and they were sitting on stools right next to each other. And at one point early in the interview, you could probably tell that Virginia was trying to get Arnold to stop talking about certain things, and I can still picture them right now. Virginia giving Arnold the elbow, like, Arnold, don't go there. Don't go there, Arnold. Don't talk about that. You know, don't talk about our romance. Don't talk about how we met. Please, you know, and it was really sweet and endearing to watch that and to observe how they interacted. And we'll continue with the Best of the Book Nook right after this. The Best of the Book Nook continues on WYSO, going back to one of my favorite interviews from 1996. In fact, it's one of my favorite interviews ever on the program. On that day, I was joined in studio by a husband and wife, Arnold Adolph and Virginia Hamilton, the late Virginia Hamilton. And this is the final segment of our conversation, recorded back in 1996.
With all the accolades, how do you stay centered? How do you keep focused on what you're doing?
Well, we have a really, I think, a hilarious family. Our kids are very funny. I mean, they're not kids. Our adult children are very humorous, and they put us in our place all the time. Plus the fact, the reward is having the book come out and looking at it, but we know the work that goes into it. I travel all the time. I give speeches all the time. I have to do a lot of things for my publishers. And so I'm going down to Dallas for Bell Atlantic, doing the Black Families Reunion in Dallas in June, which is a huge operation. I'm going to tell stories and read stories in an enormous tent that Bell Atlantic is erecting. And I'm the star of that, right? Being the star of something demands a lot. You know, it's not all play. You have to be ready for it. And
that's where wardrobe comes in.
That's where I love wardrobe.
The literary critics never pick up on literary style first, wardrobe a close second.
No, it's a lot of work, but we have a very good time.
And we do, and your children do keep you allowing things in perspective. Right. I'll do a poetry reading, and Jamie will listen out to what I'm saying. Tremendous librarians, excited teachers, a coffee shop situation, you know. But did I have three women doing backup singing in the background? Not yet, you know. Well, you have a ways to go, Dad.
Virginia, you have a wonderful story. When you were very young, there was a storm.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And You really fell in love with stories.
Yes, my mother, well, you know what kind of weather we have here. It's very violent. And my end of town, the west end of Yellow Springs, was pretty just farms. I mean, we were outside of the corporation limit, although we're below where Antioch Publishing is now. We're in town from that. But that was beyond the corporation limit where I lived. And they were just my uncle's farms at that end of town and the Kenny farm. Not very many houses, and it was pretty scary nights and storms. Mm-hmm. And my mother, when the wind cyclone came, tried to make me feel safe, and she talked about Mother Lilac Bush and all of the trees and making them bend down, and this was the story she told me. Now bow down, she said. And so we kind of hid upstairs in the house until the cyclone had gone by. She made up a story of the whole thing so that I wouldn't be afraid. She often did that about snow falling or rain or whatever. And I have nothing but really pleasant memories about that time.
So you really come from a long line of storytellers.
I would say so. I would say so. I mean, I have cousins now who tell. That's the way they talk. They tell story, you know. I call that a kind of cultural learning, because what they are telling are family values or whatever. It's really quite fascinating.
With all of your travels, where do you find that you have your most productive writing? Is it here in Yellow Springs? Is
Always.
It in New York?
Yes, yeah. No, it has to be in, yeah, there are too many distractions in New York.
Right, that's why we left. Too much to do and see. I think you're reacting all the time. Here it's very nice. My studies on the side of our house, which faces a 100-year-old hedgerow. At that time, the property lines were made by hedgerows. It's an old, old sage orange hedgerow.
Ah.
And I get tremendous satisfaction from that, because I know the generations that have seen it. You know, so I see it through my eyes and my mother's and my grandmother's.
And my office just has Clara stories for Sky, but see nothing else, really.
And I get the feeling Virginia, at least, is an early bird.
Oh, we both are.
You both get up early in the morning?
He gets up first.
I'm the old New Yorker who still doesn't drive a car. And there's a long tradition in the family that one must constantly make penance for being driven everywhere. And so, but of course, penance works two ways. I'm mixing a metaphor. Penance is a double-edged sword. That doesn't, unless it's a penance knife.
So I drive you everywhere. Make it clear.
So you have to drink my coffee. So
that's
I get
right.
up early and make the coffee.
You
first.
Make the coffee,
yeah.
And then you wake me up. But yeah. I'm up by 7:30 and work until
maybe
around
a shared
1.
Hostility. I don't know.
1 or 1:30, I think.
We both work a great deal in the morning. Yeah,
that's the best time. By 1 o'clock, my focus is leaving me slowly, you know.
And that's when we'll go downtown and get the newspaper at the shop or do some shopping and
see you
in the street.
Talk to
or,
people.
You know, come home and have some herbal tea and look at the paper and catch up on what's happening in the world. And the phone calls come in. And a very nice thing about being any kind of an artist in Yellow Springs, particularly today, is that you have an answering machine on the telephone, a fax machine, email, that kind of thing, which allows you to have long periods of time without interruption if you work those machines to your advantage. And publishers cannot call up and say, you're only up on 78th Street and Broadway, take a taxi and come down to the office because we have to work on these galleys or there's been an emergency, as they did when we lived in New York.
Yeah. Yellow Springs really is a nurturing community for the arts. I think it's a very unusual community. I moved here just over 3 years ago, and I've never seen another place like it.
It's rare.
Right.
It's rare.
I think that's true. It's nice for me. Everybody knows me. They leave me alone. When they can't help themselves, they ask me to come and speak or do something.
These are really exceptional books. Everything about them is just so well done. The artwork, everything.
That's what we call fine bookmaking.
Yeah.
It really is.
Quality publishing. And it's taken years to be able to establish relationships with the kinds of editors who will spend the money on the kind of paper that will take a Barry Moser watercolor and then have it reproduced as finely, almost as finely as the original. and who'll do a larger collection of poetry, for example, with illustrations. These are good times for good writing and good times for fine illustration in children's and young adult literature. And we're fortunate to be where we are and have established the kinds of track records that enable these books to be published. The poster for the Virginia's When Birds Could Talk book, they use such fine quality paper to make the poster that I think when they tried to fold it so it would cost them less money to ship it, it cracked. And so
They ruined them.
Well,
exactly.
They're not folding them anymore. They're sending them unfolded. But they went even to the extreme of that
very heavy,
superb
paper.
heavy paper.
It, you know.
Yeah, which is marvelous because you do want to frame them. But every detail is looked at very carefully by art directors and editors and publishers, and that's extraordinary today.
What projects are you currently working on?
Well, I was working on a sequel to one of my novels when I was asked to do another collection because these have become so popular. So since I was going to do another collection anyway, and Barry's going to illustrate it, and the window of opportunity with Barry is very small because he is so busy doing other projects. So I dropped the novel for now. I have a June 1st deadline on the collection, and I've been frantically working because I just got back from New Orleans and Houston. And I have to have those stories in, not because the book has to be done that soon. It's not going to come out until August of 97, but because
right.
Barry needs a year.
He's probably between Deuteronomy and Revelations, and he can spend a few months painting.
Right. So anyway, that's what they tell me. That has to be in June. We'll see if I make it or not, but I hope to.
Yeah. I'm just finishing work on an updating and a revision of my very first publication, which was an anthology of what was called Negro poetry in those days. I am the darker brother, and I've added 20 poems, agonized because I've only been allowed to add 20. I think I Xeroxed 150 that one must add. Think of the African-American poets who've been publishing from 1967 when that book was published until 19, almost 97 when the book will appear. So that's exciting. There'll be a new jacket and an updating of all the biographical material. And apropos what we've been talking about with artists, I've been getting color Xeroxes from a relatively new artist who's doing a new book of my own poetry, which is called Love Letters. And that'll be out this winter of 96, hopefully in time for Valentine's Day. They're marvelously funny poems, and she's an extraordinary artist. She's doing things. Let me tell you what my editor said yesterday. We're very split apart now because our editor's recently married and gave birth to her first child. So the artist is in her studio in New York. Virginia and I are in Yolo Springs, Ohio. The editor is married to a film editor, so she's in Santa Monica. And Bonnie, the editor, called up and said, Lisa, the artist, I talked with her yesterday. I said, well, what is she doing? She said, this was the conversation. Lisa said, I'm sitting on the floor making a dragon out of wire, and I'm going to be pasting green leaves on it and making a topiary dragon. And Bonnie said she thought that was exciting. And when she got off the phone with the artist, she looked through my manuscript again and couldn't find a single poem in the manuscript that had anything to do with a dragon. But it didn't matter because this artist is so extraordinary. It'll fit if she saw something. So it's beyond illustration, and that's very exciting for a poet or anybody who writes for any age, because it just takes your work and makes another dimension out of what you've done with quote-unquote mere words. And that's Love Letters. That'll be out in January of 97.
We have a wonderful illustrator just down the road in Clark County, the editorial cartoonist for the Springfield News Sun, David Catro.
Yeah, I
know.
He was on the show recently.
He's just a great guy.
I guess he's booked solid.
Right.
And then what happens with really fine artists, they start out illustrating other people's writing, poetry and prose, and then they do their own writing.
sometimes when I tease them, I say they learn to read and write words. And then they don't need us anymore.
Right.
And so I used to hope I'd get David to illustrate something. And now I've given up hope because for the rest of his great career, he'll be creating his own text and illustrating it as well. But which means he gets to keep twice the amount of money. So you can't argue with that.
He draws some great birds, too. But,
he does. Yeah, he's superb. Got quite a good reputation.
A recent Sunday edition of the Cleveland Plain Dealer had a feature on writers from Ohio and who's here and who's not and who's been around. And they said that Virginia Hamilton is the greatest living writer currently living in Ohio.
Hey.
We haven't seen that
one. I haven't seen that
one. It's about a month ago. Sunday Cleveland Plain Dealer. And I read that and I said, I've got to get you people on this program. We've got to do it now.
Of course, it's true. But, and particularly nice because we haven't been up to Cleveland in a while, mm-hmm. and I don't even think they called and did an interview. So it was somebody's, considered opinion, mm-hmm. which is lovely. Ohio's produced some wonderful writers. Like in that Cleveland area, you think of Rita Dove, was a poet laureate of the United States, African-American woman poet, and Toni Morrison from Lorraine, just to mention two.
They must have left Ohio.
They don't live here anymore, right?
Well, it's to your good fortune
that
they don't live in Ohio.
There you go. That's now you're limiting me.
Well, the Cleveland Plain Dealer did that.
My guests are Arnold Adolph and Virginia Hamilton, and they have some new books out. Among the many that they have put out over the years, Arnold has Slow Dance Heartbreak Blues, a book of poetry. Virginia has When Birds Could Talk, Bats Could Sing, and Her Stories, African-American Folk Tales, Fairy Tales, and True Tales. And these are just exceptional books. It's really been great having you on the program. I can't thank you enough.
Thanks so much.
Been wonderful.
These are fun books, and as an adult, I thoroughly enjoyed them.
Well,
so
good.
I don't think that they're targeted towards any age group, in my opinion.
We say eight to ageless.
Or children and their older allies.
There you
go. It's a phrase that I like.
Virginia Hamilton, Arnold Adolph, thank you so much.
We're
going to segue into some music by Charles Mingus.
You've been listening to the Best of the Book Nook on WYSO, my 1996 interview with Virginia Hamilton and Arnold Adolph. And it was really fun at the end of the interview to segue into a tune by the visionary jazz musician Charles Mingus, because he was part of their romantic story. He was on the scene when Virginia and Arnold met in New York City back in the late 1950s. And very much part of the story, and it was fun to surprise them by playing a Mingus track as we went out of that interview. And really a great conversation, a lot of fun with Virginia and Arnold back in the day in 1996. You've been listening to The Best of the Book Nook on WYSO. For The Best of the Book Nook, I'm Vic McCunis. Thanks, as always, for listening.